Welcome to another episode of Women Leading Validation. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez Acevedo. Today's spotlight conversation is with Denise Dalis, Senior Vice President of R&D, Regulatory and Quality at Sinetra, located here in California. A fellow chief member, Denise graciously shared her day and experience and thoughts with us on day two of Connect's GMP University. Denise is a biomedical engineer with a bachelor's and master's degree from Washington University in St. Louis and is currently pursuing a doctorate in engineering management from George Washington University. Denise has over 15 years' experience in both industry and academia, leading new product development, global regulatory affairs, and quality management in medical devices. After working for companies such as Inamed, Allergan, and Persin, Denise transitioned to academia, where she led research lab focused on brain-computer interfaces, being the first woman to lead a research lab in electrical engineering department, and was in charge of over 10 different research projects. Denise returned to corporate life after more than 6 years dedicated to research and teaching to lead the R&D department of Establishment Labs, an aesthetic medical device company, successfully developing over 8 different products, taking them from concept to market. Denise currently serves as the Senior VP of R&D and Regulatory and Quality at Sinetra and is responsible for developing the innovative strategy, which includes managing the technology roadmap to address current and anticipated customer needs, leading the design, planning, and implementation of the company's global regulatory strategy and quality system, as well as scouting and assessing new technologies and business development opportunities. Denise is also the co-author of several publications in peer-reviewed journals and a book chapter, and is named an inventor on a number of medical technologies. Please welcome Denise.
All right. Well, welcome, Denise. We're here live at Connect's GMP University in San Diego. I'm super excited to be able to have you as a guest on the podcast for Women Leading Validation. So welcome. How are you today?
Thank you, Dori. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, you drove down not too far.
Yeah, about an hour and a half from Irvine, so not too bad.
Great. Wonderful. So, you know, Women Leading Validation is a new initiative from Connects. We're partnering together to try to make sure that women's voices are heard across the life sciences, and specifically in validation. And so when I met you through Chief, I was like, this is a perfect opportunity to get you on our podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. Very exciting.
Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came to be?
Sure. Well, I'm Denise, originally from Costa Rica, so sunny and beautiful, rainy too. I'm a biomedical engineer by training. I have a bachelor and a master's in biomedical engineering and just finishing my doctorate in engineering management, but always very close to the life sciences and the mix between engineering and medicine. Started my career in manufacturing, actually as a production supervisor for a company called Inamed, which was later acquired by Allergan. And started just building medical devices. So doing everything from assembly to packaging to testing. So everywhere in the manufacturing floor, in the manufacturing line. But my passion was always in how do you get new things done? How do you create new things? How do you validate new things? How do you take them to market? So I quickly transitioned more into product engineering, which was understanding the product. When you get a complaint, what do you do with it? How do you go back? Very linked to manufacturing. So how do you go back to your manufacturing? You assess what happened there. Do you need to change processes? Do you need to change components? How do you link that into your quality system? And then your whole process all the way to taking it to a market. Big life change and moved on to academia.
Ah.
So went into full teaching mode. And also research, which is a big passion of mine. So I was leading a machine learning lab,
but
focused on brain-computer interfaces. So everything from EEG and using electrical brain signals to control robots to implantable electrodes that you would use. So I would say still product-related, but a completely different type of way of managing a product and doing your research, even though I love academia. I love teaching. I love research. It gets boring when you...
Really? I would think there's endless experiments you can continuously do.
Well, there's endless experiments, but they don't,
don't go anywhere.
Exactly. They don't lead to you actually seeing something in the hands of a patient.
Actually art of producing something that's useful.
And for me, I've had the privilege of taking maybe 12, 15 products all the way from concept to market. And that level of how proud you feel when you see a product that was in your hands, that you know everything that went through it, and seeing it on patients, it's just so satisfying.
I completely and totally agree. And that's one of the things I miss about manufacturing myself. And so when I moved over to software quality, it's kind of a different thing. And the end result is not the same. There's a little bit of a gap of satisfaction there.
It's always that nerve-wrenching when you're being your first patients, first in humans, you never know if it's going to work, right?
Very
anyway, nice. So I went back into industry, mostly leading R&D. Mm-hmm. So I was called head of science and technology at a company called Establishment Labs. And I did pretty much everything from the R&D perspective, from gathering customer feedback, how do you translate into your user needs and what your product needs to be, to the conceptualizing phase, but then all of your development phase, right? How do you make sure you develop the product the right way based on regulations, based on your requirements, your technical file, your DHF, your validations, process validations, and then introducing that product into manufacturing and making sure that you can reproduce it in a consistent way and that everything is up to standard, then receiving feedback from the field and how do you introduce that back into your systems, and always very linked to the whole life cycle of the product. I was there for several years, a lot of successes, a lot of cool stuff that came out of it. And then I was offered the opportunity to come to my company currently, which is called Sientra here in Southern California. And here I have a really interesting role. My title is SVP of R&D, Regulatory and Quality, but I pretty much oversee everything that's taking the product and assessing it from the quality perspective, regulatory perspective, clinical perspective, and R&D. So I lead R&D, med affairs, clinical, regulatory, and quality.
It's a big umbrella.
It's a big umbrella, but what's fun is that I get to see the different stages and make sure that they're lined up. Because what we see in industry a lot is that they don't line up.
Yeah. So in some of the bigger pharma and life science companies where they're siloed and you pass it from one group to the next, there's the continuity is lost, right? So you're able to really see it through from beginning to end.
Right. And really take the learnings. Let's say if you had from your clinical study, how do those relate to quality? How do those relate to R&D? It also means I wear different hats. So when I'm invited into a meeting, I always have to ask, which hat do I wear? Do I wear the fun R&D hat or do I wear the strict regulatory quality hat?
That's a great point. And I think that's something, regardless of the title and role that you have, is showing up and being really clear about who you're showing up as, right? Because we all have different perspectives and different contexts of which we are. And then, so to really be explicit, like, what are you asking of me right now? What are the decisions you're asking me to input on, and from what lens that perspective is going to come from?
Correct. And I think the other thing that having this diverse type of role has given me is that sometimes when you meet, especially when you talk about validations, when you talk about how do you move a product from a R&D to a manufacturing setup, right, and make sure that you can do it, or even your regulatory processes, you find these people leading quality, leading regulatory. It's always no, we can't do it, right? It's not possible. Nope, the validation needs to be this way, and there's no any other way. Having this broader perspective, people say, well, you're a weird quality leader, right?
I like to be weird. I think that's a great thing.
I love that. Nike says, show them what crazy can do. I love that.
I love it.
So it's like, well, right. But let's read what is the requirement. What is the standard telling us? What is the regulation asking for? These are not set in stone. It's how do you work around them, right, to be compliant, but in a way that makes sense, right? So it's been fun. because I used to fight in my previous role where I was only leading R&D, I used to fight with the head of quality and regulatory all the time. So now I have to fight with myself. And it's kind of interesting getting to that middle ground.
I think that's great. That's wonderful. It's in such that you don't have to do it with other people anymore. You can do it, the argument with yourself. So given all of that, I mean, one of the things I was thinking about as you were sharing, you know, is what are some of the learnings as a woman leader through this transition that you've gone through?
So what's interesting is that in medtech, you have a lot of the female proportions are really high. If you look at the overall, right, if you look at sales reps, if you look at the clinical world, clinical is there's a lot of female representation in the regulatory world, but still more in the engineering side of things, right? More on the R&D, on the manufacturing, on the quality piece. You might have a lot of workers that are female, a lot of, but you don't have that many leaders. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is challenging. I've never considered myself to be different because I'm a woman. I've always been that weird one, right? That's the girl among the boys clubs. And I think it's a matter of how you take it, right? I had the privilege of growing up in a family where I only have one brother, an older brother, and whatever he did, I did. And nobody expected different things from each of us. So I was very naive when I first go to college and I was in a circuits class and people were like, are you in the right class? I wouldn't even understand what they were talking about. So even though it's sometimes, I would say more than challenging, it's lonely.
It's lonely.
Right? It's lonely because you don't feel a support system, right? It, because you're usually the one, I make myself heard and I don't let anybody talk to me or treat me different because I'm a woman, but it definitely feels lonely sometimes.
It's interesting because one of the main reasons why I wanted to start the initiative of Women Leading Validation is because I never want any one of us to feel alone, right? Mm-hmm. And that the numbers are with us when we're together. And I can always find someone to share in some aspect of whatever it is and has experienced it from a woman's perspective. Right. So,
yeah. And you also want to feel like you're in control, right? So sometimes just going to somebody else and saying, oh, how do we do this? Which through the years, as we've gotten older, I've sort of lost that fear. I don't mind. And I tell my team, I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I really don't. Yep. So if you don't speak up, it's on you. It's not on me.
That's a great point because it's very funny because I say the same thing, right? Like I really don't. But if you don't speak up, right, it's showing up.
Right.
Right. And what I think as a woman leader in a space, I want to model as best I can is showing up, right? Being the voice of maybe what's not being said in the room or, bringing topics up that might be uncomfortable.
And asking questions. I think we women are really good at asking questions. Mm-hmm. So I ask them every meeting. Now they know. Say, well, Denise is going to ask why. So, yes, that's my favorite question. Why? Because you have to have a reason for what you're doing. And, you know, it's when I started in academia, even before that, I was maybe 30 something years old, right? A woman teaching in an electrical engineering course. And at first they would look at me and it's like, are you the professor? Oh, yes, I am the professor, right? But and the same thing has happened at industry, right? You have these maybe male leaders or managers that have been doing the same thing for years and years. And then this crazy woman shows up and expects them to do things differently, right? And it might be sometimes challenging, but I think it's also about building trust. Mm-hmm. So what I've been able to demonstrate is, number one, that I care. Mm-hmm. So and that I can be wrong. So if you show me why I'm wrong, fine, we'll do it your way. And I think that's been changed that with women, maybe it's a little bit easier. For us, I don't think it's so hard to say, okay, we'll try it your way. And if your way doesn't work, we'll try my way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a changed mindset, especially in this industry, which has been so dominated by male leaders for so long.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit more about the trust piece? Because I think this comes up a lot in the quality conversation. We were talking earlier about, when a lot of issues or deviations or product, whatever comes up, it often comes down to potentially training issues or something like that. And one of the things I hear most often from quality is, we don't trust that really happened, right? So we'll add another inspection or we'll add another whatever, right? Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it starts with building accountability. Mm-hmm. So I think that's crucial. Our job as quality leaders is not to trust, right? And figure out that everything is done the way we said it was going to be done. But I think my role has been mostly to show people how important it is for them to be accountable for what they're doing. If you signed something, if you signed your name to it, you're accountable for it. And if there's a mistake, it's not your manager's issue. It's not the inspector down the road. It's your issue. Mm-hmm. And one of the beauties in our industries is that we have full traceability. Mm-hmm. So we know exactly who did the each operation and we can trace it back to them. So the way they gain, I always start with the theory that everybody deserves my trust. Mm-hmm. That if they're on board is because they want to do things the right way and I don't have a reason to double guess, right? And to say, well, I'm not going to trust you and I'm going to check everything that you do. So I start from the assumption that mm-hmm. everybody knows what they're doing, that they've been well-trained, that we have the right processes to train them. But then I am very, very strongly opinionated about accountability and I make sure they know it. And it's not about putting people on the spotlight, but making sure people know if they made mm-hmm. a mistake, look, this was not done correctly. Okay, it happened. We'll do a root cause investigation. We'll figure out maybe our processes are not the right way, are not set up right, and they're not helping you do your work correctly. Mm-hmm. But you need to make sure that this happened. And what are you going to do mm-hmm. to change it? And then we give them the opportunity to show that it was a one-time thing. Most of the mistakes are operator-related mm-hmm. and they're easily solved. But it needs to be and I always tell my people, we work in implantable medical devices. And would you use it on your mother, your sister, your daughter, yourself, mm-hmm. right? And if the answer is yes, it means you're accountable for what you're doing and you know the importance of what you're doing. So I think trust is built by showing your employees that you trust, but that you also have high expectations of them and that you will hold them accountable if they don't meet up to that expectation.
I think I need to take some tips and learnings and maybe some coaching from you later because this notion of expectations, it's often been pushed to me that my expectations are too high and that I need to perhaps lower them. You've had the same.
Yeah. And you know what I've learned along the years and through difficult situations is that I have to let go. Mm-hmm. That maybe the way they're doing it is not how I would do it, mm-hmm. but it's good enough. And if I expect everybody to do it the way I would do it, I would end up doing all the work. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have bandwidth. Right. And if you really want to continue growing your career, mm-hmm. continue evolving, the higher you get, the less you know and the less information that you have. And that's something I struggle. I'm a very technical person. I love the details. I want to see, okay, show me your sample size calculation. And they look at me and are like, are you kidding me? Are you sure you want to see that? Oh, yeah, I want to see that, right? And so it's learning to let go and try to stay at a higher level, right, without going into the details. I still struggle with it, don't get me wrong. But what I say, okay, I'll try to keep quiet during the meetings and say, okay, is it good enough? Mm-hmm. Is it compliant?
Right.
Will it get us to where we need to be? Is it how I would do it? Probably not. But can I live with it?
Right. Sure. Can you live with it? Right. And I think that it does. It speaks to the volume of letting go. But also in balance with your previous statement around accountability,
right?
If the collective all agree on what those definitions of accountability are and willing to put in that 100% of their accountability,
right?
And I'm willing to show up with my 100% part of the accountability.
Right. And also because if you make all the decisions and if you tell them exactly how to do it, the accountability is always on you.
Right.
They never become accountable for what they did. So it's been a challenge. The other thing I've learned and sometimes I learned it in a meeting just maybe a year ago. I was at a meeting with my R&D team and I made a suggestion. Hey, we were trying to design a new feature on a device and have we tried to the next meeting, they had dropped everything they were working on just to do what I had suggested. And all of a sudden I realized, well, my suggestions are not just brainstorming anymore. They take it as direction.
Yeah, so that's the effect of having the highest paid voice in the room say something, right? And I've experienced that as well. And trying to figure out a way to not do that intentionally, or by mistake. Frankly, it's unintentional consequences of speaking my mind, which right. I'm sure you do as well, right? So, you know, we have these ideas and they come out of our mouths, and before we can, you know, caveat them or you know, mitigate them, someone already has heard them and goes off and
they go. So what I'm doing right now, I always try to stay quiet during the meetings. I take a lot of notes. So I write down everything they're suggesting. I look at it and I said, okay, can I live with it? And if there's something that's completely off, I would say, what do you think of this or that? Or I start my sentence by, I'm not saying you should do it, but have we considered? I think that helps. And then the other thing is, if there's something that we're going to be discussing, if there's like a vote involved, I always go last. Mm-hmm. Because we were choosing a color right. for something, and I voted first, and then everybody voted for my color, right? So I think that also builds accountability, right? Mm-hmm. When I'm on a call and there are, so Denise, what do you think of? It's like, well, what do you think? Mm-hmm. What's your proposal? Mm-hmm. And
well, because when they're asking that, they really do want to know your opinion.
Right.
Right. The people pleasing, and there's this other stuff probably going on in there.
Or they're just, maybe they don't have it all figured out.
And they don't want to come to the conversation saying, I'm not sure yet. I want to ideate this with you.
Right. But you know what? It's also important for them to make their own mistakes, mm-hmm. to figure out what works and what doesn't work. Of course, in a way that won't put us in trouble further down the road. But have them figure it out for themselves. It helps build that trust. Mm-hmm. It helps build that accountability. And again, it comes back to my why. If they can explain to me why they think that's the right thing to do, I tend to say go for it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to say, no, you're completely wrong. This is how we will do it, right?
Right.
Or happened to me yesterday. We are the final steps towards a new product, and we're in the validation phases, and they come to me with these ideas of, we're gonna do this and we're gonna do that and we're gonna validate with this thickness, but we're gonna use that other thickness. And after listening for them for 45 minutes, I just couldn't take it anymore. So guys, you have it all wrong. What thickness are you gonna use? 30. Then why the hell are you gonna validate with 50? No, because maybe in the future you'll validate again. Mm-hmm. So you have to draw the line when they are going completely off tracks, because then it becomes, I mean, you start reading, especially in quality documents, validation documents, right? Or all these deviations and all these ways to try to rationalize the decisions that they've made. And it just becomes very tricky. Mm-hmm. I tend to be very straightforward. Mm-hmm. Tell them, let's be simple-minded. Mm-hmm. Let's keep it easy. Straightforward. Anybody can read it and understand it. You don't have to bring the expert to the room when an auditor walks in here. Mm-hmm. You can read it, understand it, get it done. Make it simple, because the more complicated you make it, and we engineers tend to do that, right? We tend to overcomplicate things. But you have to keep it straightforward and simple. When I defended my doctoral thesis, one of the things the advisor said, he said, well, this was interesting because it was very straightforward. I said, well, I love that, because some people try to make it so complicated. It doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it better.
Right, right. So. Awesome. So can we, now that you're at the level of the career that you're at, is there things that you would have shared with your earlier self, or that you would impart on folks or women that are starting out in their careers now that you wish you knew then?
Yeah, number one is mentors. They make such a difference. So finding those people, and I found them a little bit later in my career, and maybe I struggled at the beginning, but so, and when I say a mentor, it's not only somebody you look up to and you say, oh, I can learn so much from you. But what I found made a huge difference in my life is when I found a couple of mentors that believed in me so much that they had way higher expectations of myself than what I did. And they believed I could do it. And for example, I told you I was in academia for 9 years and I was part of a research lab. And one day the PI comes to me and says, and it was a machine learning lab. I had the brain computer interface portion, but we had everything from robots playing soccer to tracking soccer players to tracking cells in a biopsy. I mean, we had a lot of different areas in that lab, over 70 students and all levels from undergrads to grads. And the PI came to me and said, you know what, Denise, I'm going to go do a postdoc overseas and I want you to direct the lab. And I was like, okay, and how am I going to do that, right? I did not tell them to even say, I said, yes, sure, I'll do it. And I asked him, are you sure? I mean, I don't even know how to start tracking soccer players. And you'll figure it out. He was so certain that I could do it. Mm-hmm. So I think that really made a huge difference in my life. When I joined this company and the CEO told me, well, I need you to lead regulatory and quality. Can you do it? I said, well, I've never done it before. I've worked with quality. I've worked with regulatory, but I've never led it. But sure, I'll figure out a way to do it. But having so much confidence in me, I think makes a difference. So I always tell everybody, look for a mentor. Look for somebody to give you that push. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And then the other one is say yes to opportunities. We women are sometimes we create all these huge mess in our heads of can I do it? Can I not do it? I've learned to say, you know what? I'm just going to say yes, I'm going to do it. And then I figure out, I go and I study hard and I prepare myself and I work hard. But don't wait until you feel like you're 100% there to say yes and start.
Yeah. I think waiting for that 100% is a fallacy, right? We're never going to really get there. So it's always having to do in advance of who we are, right? And I also love your mentoring, when you were describing that, it was more of cheerleader-like, right? For me, it's kind of also, you know, never really having that at all until very, very recently in my life, right? And having that cheerleader behind me to negate that voice.
Right, your internal voice of you can't do it.
The internal voice of can't do it or not possible yet or whatever those things are and having that confidence when I don't have the capacity to have that confidence, I think is huge, huge.
Yeah, and also the other thing I would recommend is speak up. Mm-hmm. Ask questions. Mm-hmm. Be heard. I mean, make sure you be respectful always, but you don't just have to comply with what everybody says, right? You have to ask, is this right? Are we doing it right? Is there a better way to do things? Mm-hmm. And let's just not follow the trend. Let's figure out a way to do it better. So,
great. So Denise, is there, we're going to be getting inside today and we're going to have some think tank panels, which is awesome. I'm so excited to bring you to this community here at Connects. Is there anything lasting you want to share with folks?
Yeah, I think that the most important part for everybody to get out of this is an amazing field and we have the opportunity to impact lives, right? When you're in the life science, no matter what you're doing, and the impact is as big if you're in manufacturing, if you're in sales, if you're in metaphors. So always think, how is this impacting somebody else's life? And when you think about your quality questions, I think that's where you find the answers. Right. You always find the answers if you think, how is this product going to be used? How is this going to benefit the patients? And what are the risks that I'm bringing into the final user if I do the things different? Because sometimes in such a highly regulated environment, it gets very frustrating. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to do it this way? Why does it have to be so hard? Why this sample size? Why all these protocols? Why this much testing? And it gets very frustrating. So try to look outside of your specific job function and think about the broader perspective, and it'll make everything so much more enjoyable.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Denise, for your time today. I appreciate it. And we'll have more conversation later this afternoon.
Perfect. Thank you.